Welcome to the Cool Tools Show. I'm Mark Frauenfelder, Editor-in-Chief of Cool Tools, a website of tool recommendations written by our readers. You can find us at cool-tools.org. I'm joined by my co-host, Kevin Kelly, founder of Cool Tools. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, it's great to be here.
In each episode of the Cool Tools Show, Kevin and I talk to a guest about some of his or her favorite uncommon and uncommonly good tools they think others should know about. Our guest this week is Vanessa Mason. Vanessa is the research director at the Institute for the Future, a 50-year-old nonprofit organization that helps individuals, organizations, and communities think systematically about the future. That's where I met Vanessa because I work there too. Vanessa's futures research explores how we can redesign and reimagine well-being and belonging across business, social, and civic spheres. Vanessa's written for and been quoted in several media outlets, including NPR and Fast Company, and she also writes about the future of belonging at belonging.substack.com, which is a cool newsletter, and we can talk about that a little later. Hey, Vanessa, how are you?
Great. How are you doing?
Doing really well, thank you.
I'm really delighted to meet you, and I'm eager to hear your suggestions for cool tools.
And so, Vanessa, I'm really excited for someone to explain what Notion is to me, because I've heard a lot about it, but I really haven't had time to like dig into it or even like look at it or download it, if that's what it is a download. So tell me, explain it to me like I'm five. What is Notion?
Notion is a little bit of everything. They call themselves an all-in-one workspace, but you can think of it as a notes-taking app. You can think of it as something you can capture articles and things from the web. You can use it to create vision boards. You can use it to be wikis. It's kind of a little bit of everything. And because it's also templatized, it makes it very easy to create your own space, both from scratch, as scratch can be from a template, where you can completely customize it. But I really love Notion because I think of it as my digital brain. That's where I put all the sort of random thoughts and ideas and concepts that I'm working on or things that I want to read or have read and want to go back to. And I keep it all in Notion. And it keeps it in a very clean, easy to navigate interface with a lot of different customizable views that are done with one click. It's available on mobile. I love it. It's the one app that I truly love.
And how is it different from some of the other note-taking things like Evernote, just for one example?
Sure. So I was a years-long Evernote user. So one is the use of templates. So it makes it very easy to get yourself set up. If you wanted to use like a wiki, for example, a lot of startups are using Notion for that, for their sort of knowledge base and wikis for internal purposes. It allows you to build databases rather easily, and you can customize different views. So you can make a calendar view, like for an editorial calendar, for this podcast, for example. You can use databases. I'm using it to collect articles that I often will look at and referencing for my newsletter. It's just really an easy kind of customizable tool for whatever kind of knowledge and resources that you're trying to keep on hand.
And, I understand how you could use it kind of like as a personal scrapbook or notebook where you're taking notes or adding articles or bookmarks, as the case may be. Can you also use it as a publishing media? Can you kind of make a page and then decide that you want it to be public, like a blog?
Yes, you can. And there are a number of people that use it for that exact same purpose, to use it as a blog. So it allows you to both make private use or professional use. And again, kind of drag and drop kind of functionality to do so as well. So I think it really fits in with that vein of a lot of no code kind of tools that we've seen come out in the last couple of years.
And what's the downside? What don't you like about it?
What don't I like about it? I think they're still working on this, but sometimes the sort of offline compatibility can be a little bit tricky depending on when you've opened the app. So, you know, I'm someone who I do a lot of thinking on planes back in the day when we used to travel. And so there would occasionally be some times where certain notes wouldn't be available depending on when the last sort of cache had happened. I think those things are getting ironed out as the company continues to grow. But that's been the one frustration I've had. Other than that, I think that they've been hyper responsive to their users. they have a ton of integrations, and many of which I probably can't even truly capture because of the kind of enterprise use for this. And so, you know, I think that there's a lot of opportunity and really in this space of around sort of consumerization of enterprise apps, like something like this.
The rusty gears in my brain are starting to rotate and engage from listening to you describe Notion. And I do kind of remember now seeing it. It kind of reminds me of a easy to use, graphically much more pretty version of like a wiki.
Yes, but it can also be, there's ways where it can look like Trello. Like, you know, like it kind of just depends. It makes it very customizable to organize information and thinking just based on how you're used to thinking and you need to process that. So it could be across time. It could be kind of that Kanban stored style. It could be more of a database form. It really just allows you to make it easy to manipulate and share information with people.
And if you are sharing, say, a document in the way that Google Docs would be shared, does it work in the same way where two people could be working on the same thing at the same time? And if that is true, is there a way to track what one person does versus another? Is there kind of a log of changes, et cetera, things like that?
I don't know if there is a log of changes. To my knowledge, multiple people can work it on at the same time. Like, as I said, I've used it a lot for personal use. When I've used it in the workplace, it's been more so, again, trying to build like a knowledge base of some sort. People are contributing to it, but we didn't necessarily need to have a historical log of what had come before. It was just this thing needs to exist and, again, be publicly available, so that publishing to the web piece was very instrumental.
So do people use it instead of Google Docs?
Yes, you can use it instead of Google Docs. You can integrate your existing Google Docs into it.
Wow.
You can do
it
both.
It just has everything. So do you find that the personal free version is good enough, or do you do the personal pro that's $4 a month?
I do the personal pro just because I had a lot of legacy information in Evernote and I wanted to abandon Evernote. And so because of that, I think you get a certain number of blocks or something like that per month on the free account. So I think for people who are just getting started or using it every once in a while, like that's certainly helpful. But I think I'm not that kind of user.
So I use Notion every day. I write every evening in it. With my son, we share when we're rewriting for each other and posting stuff and bookmarks and stuff.
Cool.
And but I feel like I've only used maybe 2% of its functions. And I'm interested in kind of trying to turn it open to do have a part of it where the stuff that I've been writing would make public. So it does seem to be very, very flexible in that way. I had not really thought about it. Replacing Google Docs, but that seems very feasible and maybe something we should try.
Could it actually be like a publishing platform where you could turn it into like a place where you would have essays and share them?
Yeah, I think so. People do.
Yeah, I've seen it before. People have done it.
Yeah, and it does have kind of a drag and drop feel to it where you know, it's very easy to kind of move stuff into it by dragging. And I'm a Mac, you know, drag and drop guy. I that seems to me the natural way to do things.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm going to start looking into this a little more and see, because I'm a huge Evernote user and I have tens of thousands of Evernote notes over, you know, well over a decade's worth of stuff. I was kind of an early adopter and I typically use it with my ScanSnap scanner where I just scan receipts or I remove the staples from users' manuals and scan those in. I don't know if Notion would be good as that kind of searchable database of like, you know, my rent agreement, you know, from like 10 years ago or something.
So Vanessa, do you have any idea of its search capabilities?
There works pretty well for me. I usually use a search for everything that's not like a favorite of mine. I try to keep my favorites limited, so maybe 6 or 7 of those that live in the left sidebar. And then for everything else, I just search. It never takes me long to find things. You can embed, like I said, a lot of things. You can embed PDFs so that old rental agreement can go into a note. You can have an entire note that just comprises, you know, essential documents.
Does it search within inside the PDF?
I don't think it does, but I could be wrong, just like I said, because like they're doing updates. And so depending on the nature of your PDF, if it's machine readable, like it's possible that they might now offer that.
Okay. So thank you. What's another one on your list is Duolingo.
Yes. Which is that, a recent.
How you use it.
So my boyfriend actually started with a Duolingo Plus account. And so now the both of us are using that kind of as a way of, you know, if we're going to be on screen time, to be reinforcing languages that we already have from having lived in other countries. So I've been using it to reinforce a lot of my Spanish and Portuguese. I've started dabbling in learning French. And the part that actually has been most engaging for it is, we're really competitive people. And every 5 days, if you're in the top 10, you end up in a new league. And so we're always competing to win the league. And so it's a nice way of, maintaining language capabilities that I already have, and doing it in a more, gamified way. One of the rare instances where I actually like gamification, I'm not really a game kind of person.
That's cool.
And explain, how it works for those who are not familiar with Duolingo. How is it teaching you these language skills?
Sure. So there's sort of two pathways. When you join the app, you can take a placement test if you already have some language abilities already, or you can just start new. We actually just started. We opened Arabic just out of curiosity yesterday, and it looks like when you start a new language, they do a lot of kind of starting with the. I forget how to say this word, phonemes, like basically the basic sort of sounds, like the building sounds of the language. And then you are asked to auditorily identify those, and then they'll sort of test your ability to remember those throughout a number of different lessons. With every lesson, there'll be some amount of lessons, and then you'll get a crown at the end of that, and then they'll move you to another level.
So when you say the they, what is the they? Is there another person on the other end? When they ask you to test you to say something, are they listening and hearing what you say? How does it actually work?
Sure. So it's not another person. It's all automated. The lessons will test things like your ability to read. It'll test your ability to say certain sentences when you get to that point when you're saying sentences. So it'll present the written version of the sentence, and you're asked to speak it into a speaker. And then it kind of does some sort of verification if you've said it generally correctly. You're asked to write, so you'll translate, so it'll present a sentence in English, and then you'll translate it to whatever language you have. We've kind of noticed, my boyfriend's languages that he looks at are more kind of Russian and Korean, mine are Spanish, Portuguese, French, Italian. The romance languages at least also have stories, so there'll be narratives, and they end up being kind of funny and quirky, and they're presented with little avatars that speak sentences aloud, and so then there's various opportunities throughout the story where they're sort of checking for comprehension. You know, they'll ask, is this what they say, yes or no? You're asked to kind of fill in the blank with what should happen next.
So there's AI, machine learning of some sort that's actually monitoring or testing you or listening to your responses or evaluating your responses. It's all done with machine learning and AI of some sort.
Yes, all done. Yes.
That's why they can kind of scale it up and have tens of thousands of people all at once. And the idea is, does it do like spaced repetition and other forms of learning?
Yes, to my knowledge, so they'll repeat certain exercises throughout.
Spaced repetition is the idea that the things that you are having trouble to remember, you are tested more frequently, and things that you actually have already mastered, you're tested less frequently. And so your actual course through the material is at your own peculiar rate, depending on what you've mastered or not. So the idea is that you want to be reminded of something just before you're going to forget it. That's the spaced repetition idea. And does it incorporate that?
I would imagine it does, because it allows you to skip levels when it sees that you've kind of commanded, you have a certain command of things. They'll definitely, before you end a lesson, if there are things that you missed, you don't get to exit a lesson without actually getting basically all of the sort of prompts or stimuli correct. And so I would imagine that that's embedded within it.
I think it does do spaced repetition, because Carla uses it for Spanish.
Okay. And so, what are they charging for the service?
I'm not sure because I don't pay for it. We just share an account because we use it to mutually compete. But I know that they've been one of the apps that has been one of the most popular ones in lockdown as people are really turning to self-improvement without as much activity.
Alrighty. But you feel that at least with two people using it, it's a bargain.
Yes, definitely.
Okay. So tell us about your third choice, your third pick, bullet journal.
My third pick isn't tech at all. I've been bullet journaling for the last 2 years. Again, I kind of use Notion, like I said, as like more, I regard it as my digital brain. Like bullet journaling is like my analog version, because I just have so much information, so much that I'm reading all the time. And so this is my way of both focusing on things that I'm actually doing. So that's what I'll write my top few tasks of the day, as well as an opportunity to do a lot more kind of more mindfulness practices, which I've been trying to integrate more in my life. So moments of gratitude, for me, moments of self-care. I tend to be one of those people who overworks a lot. And so I have space allotted in that to be sure that I'm taking time to take care of myself every day. And so this is an analog.
What's a bullet journal versus a regular journal?
So this is a practice that was done by Ryder Carroll. He's now written a book about it, who was a UX designer. And the idea, it's sort of where productivity means mindfulness. So you could buy a planner and certainly keep track of all the tasks that you're doing. But part of the bullet journaling and creating your own custom setup is, again, tailoring things that work for you. I think also just the conscious effort that's required when you are physically writing is part of the practice as well. So taking time to slow down and think about what's important and prioritize what's important.
I guess I'm not really following with the difference. So there's a journal. A journal, in my eyes, is just a blank book. You can put whatever you want into it. Is this like a, is the bullet journal, is it paper or the book it's different, or is this a different process? I'm not really sure what a bullet journal is.
Sure. So it's also a blank notebook and a pen. And it's the same principle that you could write in a blank notebook and it could just be journaling. But the idea of this is to add some level of structure, which is the productivity piece of it, so that you can
Is that the
get.
bullet part of it?
Yeah, so that's the bulleting part of it. So the idea is that rather than having to-do items kind of swimming around in your mind, you should be noting them in your notebook. So some of those might be like what are traditionally more journaling kind of things. So just what your sensations are during the day. But they also just might be tasks. And the idea is that you want to capture those in a notebook, on a daily basis. So such that you can have that space to take care of them if they're more like a productivity oriented manner or maybe just generalized journaling.
So could you give an example of like what you might write like today?
Today I would write for my top three tasks for today. So as Mark mentioned, we have our conference coming up next week. So I was making tweaks on my run of show for the two panels that I'm managing. Two was making sure that I was reading through about this coming up this afternoon for what the structure of this was going to be. And then the third is that there's another project that I'm also working on for work. Just related to finalizing a report. So those are my top three tasks for today,
Those would
that
be
were bulleted.
three bullets. Those would be three bullets, and you would have those separated out visually on the page or something.
So for me, I go ahead and sort of create separate blocks for like every day. Some people do what are called like rolling weeklies or rolling dailies. So they'll kind of write down all the tasks and then they'll do like different kinds of symbols to show what they're working on for that day or what's actually done.
And is this something that you go back to reread later on? Is the point to reread it later on, or is it mostly for the present and the future?
I go back and read mine later on because I have other things that aren't just what I'm doing that day. Like I said before, I note moments of gratitude. So sometimes I like to go back and look at those. I do think a lot of people are just using it for present and future. So there's one of the components that Ryder Carroll talks about is a future log. So writing down every event that's going to be coming so you can go back and refer to it as you're using your bullet journal throughout the year. So there's it. The real answer is it depends.
Okay. So if someone wanted to start bullet journaling, what do you recommend? Is there a, you mentioned this writer, is there a book that tells you how to do it, or is, what's the best source for taking this up?
Yeah. So his name is, it's Ryder. So it's R-Y-D-E-R, Carol. I believe it's Carol with two R's. That's the name of the person who created this method. So he has a book called The Bullet Journal Method that you can buy or check out from the library. That would be a really great source for that in learning. I haven't personally read the book. I've read, he had his own website before he wrote the book. And so I looked at the website before. There's also huge social media communities on Instagram, on YouTube that really get into this. Some people use it as a creative space. There's a lot of people who use it for drawing and painting and kind of creative pursuits. And then there's other folks who are really more kind of the productivity vein who get really deep in the weeds about process and techniques and tactics.
Okay. The bullet journal method already. Well, that sounds really, really great.
Yeah. And you like the analog nature of it to kind of get away from being on your computer all the time. Is that part of the whole pleasure of using it?
Yes, for me, that's part of the pleasure of using. In normal times, it made a lot more sense to be decreasing a lot of screen time. I also use it a little bit as just like a creative outlet too. I don't draw, but I do like to kind of, you know, like there's a lot of ideas around like themes for the month. So some people like draw things. Like I'll just use it to kind of like use different color pens and markers and things like that.
Okay, so kind of textual drawing.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. So, your fourth pick, tell us about what an away suitcase is.
So this is just, it's a, one of, I think there are probably other smart suitcases, but I think this was the first one that was kind of billed as like the millennial smart suitcase. It includes a battery inside the suitcase, so you can charge your phone and one other device while you're traveling. In general, I think that the creators of the suitcase they're very into travel and did a lot of great user research before, because a lot of the placement of the zippers and sort of sizing the suitcase and how it zips open so that it falls flat just make a lot of sense for people who are traveling a lot. I love it because, again, I'm someone who loves to travel. And so when I was, like, I could get away with just a roller suitcase that could fit in the overhead cabins and could travel for up to 10 days if I was going somewhere warm, up to a week if it was somewhere cold, with just a roller bag, because it's designed in such a way that you can fit all your clothes and everything very well. Okay.
So Away is a brand, is that right?
It's a brand, that's correct.
Okay, so it's a brand, and it's basically a roller, it's kind of a roller type, the kind with four wheels or the one with two wheels?
The one with four wheels.
So it's a type with four wheels, but then you say it's also what some might call smart because it has a battery. And besides having a battery, what else is smart about it?
I think the smart is just about the battery, honestly.
Okay.
I'm opposed to the smart label kind of being put on anything that, because it's adjacent to electronics, but... that is what they call it.
So does that become an issue when you're going on a plane and your luggage has batteries? I guess, does that mean, some, at least they were very peculiar about batteries. Some wanted you to not check it in and some required you to carry it on. Does it have any impact on your suitcase if you have a battery inside the suitcase?
Some airlines still do that. The battery comes out really easily. Underneath the handle is where the battery is. You basically raise the handle that you would use to pull the suitcase along. And then there's a little kind of tab. And when you push the battery into the cavity that it's in, it pops itself out. So it's really easy to remove should you be asked to remove it. It's a matter of a few seconds.
And there are carry-on versions, I would imagine?
Yes, there are two different size carry-on versions of it. I have the smaller one that fits on all airlines. There's a slightly larger one they have that fits for most.
Yeah, I'm a carry-on person myself. So that would, and this is a hard case. Is it plastic? Is it aluminum? What's it made out of?
Mine is plastic. They recently released an aluminum one, I believe at the end of last year, I think is when I saw it. I think now that I know about it, I wish that I had the aluminum one just because I think the plastic one is very durable, definitely. But I think sometimes, you know, aluminum, given how baggage is often treated, might be better.
Right. I see. Okay. So the main attraction for you is the fact that it has a battery built in. And the reason why you like a battery built into the suitcase is, what does it do?
I have to say, actually, the battery isn't the main attraction for me. The main attraction for me is having a suitcase that's guaranteed to fit in all places that I can travel with for a long period of time. Like, I'm much more, you know, the battery for me is a nice to have. But the, you know, being able to carry everything that I need to carry and travel where I want to go and not have to wait at the carousel is essential.
All right.
Cool.
So, is there a particular model then, that you would recommend, or let's say the model that you're using, do you recall what it was, or?
I don't recall the exact name of it. I wish I had written, but
it's a carry-on version.
It's a carry-on, and it's the smaller one of the carry-ons.
We'll find it, and we'll put it in the... Sure.
So they have something called the carry-on with pocket, the carry-on aluminum, the carry-on, I guess, the expandable carry-on.
I'm just the carry-on. I'm looking at it right now. Yeah. So it's and I got it in white. So even if I do have to check it, it's very easy to see a white suitcase.
Yes.
That's cool.
Okay.
All right. Great. So Vanessa, in the few minutes that we have left, tell us about your newsletter, which I subscribe to and really enjoy.
Thank you. So this was a newsletter that I started at the beginning of this year just because I had a lot of curiosity about belonging. As Mark said, we worked together at Institute for the Future, and a lot of my work there, I just saw major trends like increases in loneliness, people not really being into belonging to social clubs and religious institutions, and just, of course, a lot of the societal, both like exclusion and oppression that we're seeing today. So basically, as I started thinking about, you know, if these forces are to continue in the future, especially when you're thinking about displacement due to climate change, a lot of things like, where are there spaces for people to feel that they belong amid all of this movement and chaos, basically. And so the newsletter has been an opportunity for me to both explore and write about and think about what does belonging look like over the next decade, and try to explore like what are new ways and new approaches that people are using to fulfill this basic human need that we all have.
Is this a free newsletter or a paid newsletter?
It's a free newsletter that I've been writing on Substack. So it's really easy to subscribe. When you go to belonging.substack.com, you can see even all of the past issues that I've written before. I've started now, since I've been doing this for the last like 8 months, I've had kind of two virtual meetups where it's an opportunity for folks to, you know, come together and share, you know, signals that they've seen of belonging, as well as, some other kind of questions and ways for that they've been, maybe work that they're doing on that's related. So
in the 8 months or so that you've been doing it, is there something about belonging that you've either changed your mind about or were surprised and didn't know 8 months ago?
That's a great question. One of the things I have been surprised about that I've been looking more into are basically the roles of conspiracies. I think, of course, like there's been a lot of articles about QAnon, but kind of the more that I look at belonging and just started thinking about kind of narrative and culture, and just thinking about like, what is the role of, you know, the sort of how humans respond to conspiracies and how that either could be used or misused to threaten belonging has been somewhat surprising to me. It's not an area that I would have inherently gone to first, but I think it's probably the place where I'll be spending a lot more time learning about.
Yeah. I mean, there's in some senses, you call it kind of like a downside to belonging.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That can be explored for sure.
Yeah. Vanessa, how do you feel about using Substack? I just started using it for a newsletter that I'm working on, and I think it's like amazing.
It's really amazing. I like the fact that it's clean. It's really easy. again, you know, I started this as a learning project, so I didn't have to invest really anything on the tool side, which I like doing that when, you know, you're uncertain of what the outcome is going to be. I don't want to spend a lot of time at the beginning trying to choose tools and mess with tools. And so the simplicity to me is very appealing.
Yeah. The constraints they have kind of force you to make it look elegant.
Yes. I've used MailChimp before and it's too much customization. Yeah, so one of the things I love about Notion is just like that, you know, there's templates. Like I don't have to build this from scratch. Like yeah. I like the simplicity and ease that that affords.
I could complain about MailChimp all day, like launch a new campaign. That's like, why not just say, you know, make a new issue of the newsletter or something. It's like campaign. That's so weird.
Yes, it's very marketing land.
Yeah, I guess so. I think we're still doing our Cool Tools newsletter on MailChimp as kind of an artifact, but I think we should move it over to Substack. And also the great thing about Substack is that it's free to use for the author, which is great, unless you start charging and then they take 10%. But otherwise, that's unusual. Most places charge, and I don't know how long they're going to be able to do that, but it's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm of two minds about free things. I'm very excited, and I think it's a great place to start. But over the long term, I feel that I actually wanted things not to be free because it guarantees that they'll be around. Many free things. Google Reader was too free.
Yeah.
So oh, true. Goodness. Yes.
Yeah. So a Flickr, you know, there's a long list of things that were free that aren't here anymore. That is a little scary. So Substack, but it's another recommendation, by the way, just for the listeners is if you do a newsletter, check out Substack. It's a new tool. So Vanessa, thank you so much for your great picks and your very, very sharp recommendations. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so much, Vanessa.
Yeah, thank you.
Hey, everybody, it's your co-host, Mark, and I wanted to let you know that we have a lot more going on here in Cool Tools than just this podcast. We have our flagship website where we review a new tool every day. That's at cool-tools.org. We also have 4 different newsletters. We have this podcast. We have a YouTube channel where we review tools. And if you like what you hear and see and read, the best way to help us out is by going to our Patreon page at patreon.com/cooltools and donate at any level you wish. You can even contribute $1 a month, and that would mean a lot to us. The money that you give us will go towards paying for our transcribing costs, editing videos, and editing the podcast. It goes towards paying contributors who write the reviews for us. It goes towards our equipment costs, our hosting costs, and it supports our very small company of 3 people. This week, I wanted to give a shout out to some of our Patreon supporters who have been giving us at least $2 a month. And if you give us $2 a month, we'll give you a shout out online. And this week, I would like to thank Michael Sacochia, Molly Starr, M. Velderman, Opposable Thumbs, Pamela Cooley, Patrick Weyer, Paul Hosey, Randy Fisher, Stuart Burroughs Brand, Synaptic Sam, Therese Schwartz, Tom Hawkins, Tom Markham, What Bear, Javier Pangolin, David Lang, Eric Byers, Sean Hartley, Stephen Powell, Greg Lichtscheidt, John Hobson, Adam Bristol, Adam Naher, Anonymous, Bill Kempthorne, Bruce I. Niles, Chris Woodruff, C. Kolos, Daryl Flynn, Egg Fleegoff, Eric Hanschrau, Eric Hoover, Godfrey Saldana, Jay Skiles, John M. Larson, Jude Galligan, Kenneth Gilman, and Lucas Frank. Thank you very much for supporting the show, and we will see you next week.